The children of Israel have just conquered the Amorites and King Og of Shion. Not only did they conquer him, but he wiped them out. God helped the children of Israel to just totally decimate this area. And this group of people were good. They were sound militarily. Because the man to the south of them, King Balak, he had tried to conquer them. And he didn't have much luck. But when Balak saw the children of Israel come in and just wipe them clean, Balak was scared. Balak was the king of Moab. And they were scared. And there were many people. The council of Midian was scared. And Balak and the council got together and wanted to know what to do. What are we going to do about this? Balak had the idea. I know. We'll get a prophet. We'll get a soothsayer. We'll get somebody to come curse these people. But not just any soothsayer is going to work here. Not just any prophet's going to work here. Or otherwise the children of Israel aren't going to believe. So they find a man, a prophet named Balaam. Balaam wasn't a Jew. He wasn't Hebrew. He was under the patriarchal age. But yet he was still a prophet of God. He still knew who God was. But Balak liked to be first. I'm sorry, not Balak, Balaam. Balaam liked to be first. Balaam had pride. Balaam loved money. And so Balaam, although he did have this avenue to God, he also decided to diversify. He went into sorcery and witchcraft. And this was the perfect guy for Balak. So he sends men. I don't know how many men. And he sends money. I'm not really sure how much money he sends. But he sends them to Balaam. And the people ask Balaam, King Balak wants you to come with us and curse the children of Israel. Curse them. To scare them off. So they don't come and attack us. But Balaam said, no, I'm not going to do it. Actually, the first thing he says, let me inquire of God what I should do. And he said, stay here. He said, stay here over the night. God will come to me and he'll tell me what to do. Because I can only do what God tells me to do. Balaam sounds like a pretty wise guy right there, eh? So he spends the night. They spend the night. And God comes to Balaam and he says, no, don't go. Don't curse the children of Israel because they are blessed. I have blessed them. Do not curse them. So the next day, Balaam wakes up and he tells the people, no, I'm not going. I'm not going to go against what God tells me to do. Think the story stops there? No. The men go back to Balak, King Balak, and Balak sends even more people. And Balak basically gives Balaam a blank check. I will give you all the gold and silver that could fill your house. I will give you all that I can. Everything. Come curse the children of Israel. Well, this is kind of appetizing for Balaam. Because remember, he's diversified now. He likes the money a lot. And so, he says to the people, okay, stay one more night. We'll see what God says. Hoping that God's answer would change so that he could have all these riches.
Sorry.
But as God comes to Balaam that night, he says, no. They're blessed people. Don't curse them. But I'll tell you what. If they come to you in the morning and they beg of you to go, you go. Well, the next morning came. And Balaam started saddling up his donkey. They didn't even come to him and say, hey, Balaam, can we go? He saddled up his donkey and he started going. He had already made up his mind. He was going to go. And he was going to get the money. This made God angry. Angry. He wasn't following what he wanted him to do. Balaam's convictions were failing. He was wanting to put his own first instead of what God wanted. And we know the rest of the story, that Balaam gets on the donkey and he's riding along with these princes and these wonderful people, and the donkey embarrasses him. They're in a tight spot. The donkey sees the angel of the Lord and he jams Balaam's foot along the rock. And eventually the donkey just stops. We remember this. And the donkey is getting beat severely by Balaam, because Balaam's getting embarrassed in front of all of these people. These princes, these people of power. He's getting embarrassed. He's scared that they're going to think less of him. And eventually the donkey turns around and talks to him. I can't imagine that not getting your attention, that the donkey's talking to you. And the donkey said, I've been your donkey for a long time, man. I've never done this to you before. And now you're beating me? And Balaam said, if I had a sword right now, I would kill you. He's embarrassed. He's thinking irrationally. And then Balaam's eyes are opened. And he sees the angel of God standing there. And the angel of God basically tells Balaam, you're lucky your donkey sat down, because I was going to kill you. Balaam's eyes were opened, and Balaam said, I have sinned. I have sinned. And the donkey had saved his life. So what happened in this story that we need to know? Why is the story here? When I first started this story, I wanted to go towards conviction. And how important it is that we are convicted. So let's go down that path. Let's look at the conviction that Balaam had. Yes, it was strong in the beginning. But when things came and he started to desire things, when trials come, when now the rubber has to meet the road, what was Balaam doing? Balaam was convinced that there was a God. But was Balaam convicted? I would say that inside of this room, everyone is convinced there is a God. To be convinced would be to firmly believe in truth of something. To firmly believe that there is a God. But it is conviction that is the action that puts the convinced to work. It's when the rubber meets the road. Let me better explain this. Do you remember in Matthew chapter 14 when Jesus was walking on the water and Peter wanted to walk on the water too? He was convinced he was going to be able to walk on the water. He stepped out on the boat. He was walking on the water. But when the winds came, he started to sink. When the winds came, when the trial came, when the tough times come, Peter got scared and he started to sink. And what was Jesus' reply? Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Why did you doubt? Let's think a little bit about Peter here. He had really good intentions. He was convinced that Jesus was the Son of God. He was convinced that he could do it. But when he got scared, he relied upon his own self instead of looking to God. He should have had more faith. Paul writes in Romans 4:21 about the faith that Abraham had. He said, being fully persuaded that God had the power to do what he had promised, this is why it was credited to him. The conviction, the faith that Abraham had is an example to us of the conviction, the faith that we should have. But Abraham, if you remember right, he didn't have it in the beginning. He worked toward it. This test came at the end of his life. But beforehand, he was tricking kings. He was doing things that he shouldn't have been doing. He didn't have the faith. He didn't have the faith. But with each trial, with each test, his faith grew. His conviction grew. It takes a lifetime to receive this. Let's go to Luke chapter 6 for a minute. Let's go to Luke chapter 6, and I want to start around the 46th verse. I'm not going to read it. I'm going to tell you about it. But here's Jesus, and he's talking, and he's telling his disciples, he's telling them, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do what I say? And then he gives us the example, the parable of the man who built his house on the rock. He dug a hole. He made a foundation. He's on the rock. His house is on the rock. And the other guy, he's building too, but he's not building on a rock. He's building on sand. He's not building on something solid. And Jesus is saying, the man who puts my words into practice is the one who's building on a rock. But the man who listens and does not put my words into practice, he's building on a weak foundation. And what happens when trials and suffering comes to the man who built his house on the sand? When the winds came and the floods came, when the trials came, what happened to him? He got washed away. But the man who built his house on the rock, when the trials came, when the tests come, stood firm. Stood firm. That's important for us to remember, because each and every day we are tried. We are tested. There's nobody in this congregation right now that's not going through a trial. I can look at each and every one of you and say, this is your tough time you're going through. Because I know about them. We all know about them. But when we don't build and put ourselves on firm rock of Jesus' word, we're going to get knocked down. We're going to get pushed out. We're going to get upset. Nothing ever works for us. That's why we need to build upon the rock. Let's go to Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. I want to go to verse 35. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble or hardship or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? What's going to separate us if we're built on the sand? We're going to separate us. But if we're built on the rock, there can be nothing that separates us. And that's scary to me. Because I think about, what am I built on? We're talking about trials and hardship and persecution. And James 1 tells us to be happy about them because they're teaching us how to be convicted. James tells us that the trials are producing a bedrock for our convictions. I'm still at the stage where these trials come and I want to cut and run. I haven't quite got there yet that I need to look at these trials as teaching tools to help me get to the point where Abraham was, to help me get to that point of conviction where I can put Jesus' words to use. I'm still not there. And if I'm not there, my guess is a lot of people in this room are still not there. I still get scared. I still want to do what I think is right instead of inquiring of God. Do we look at tests as something to wallow in and become spiritually nearsighted? Do we use our trials and sufferings as drama? Woe is me, look at poor me. When we're stuck in that point, we're missing the boat. I have found the thing that helps me most when I'm being tried, when I am being tested, the thing that helps me most is to sit down at my desk and to write a card to one of my brethren and try to cheer them up. When I am in danger of wallowing, I need to pick myself up and I need to serve. Do the challenges help us or do they hurt us? How do we take these challenges that come to us? Do we let them knock us down? Do we wallow in it? Or do we go, you know what? There's a lesson here to be learned. And I need to figure out what this lesson is. I don't do that automatically. Automatically I go, oh, again? But I've got to pick myself up. And I got to say, What is the lesson I'm learning here? What is it for me to learn? I've got to pray. I've got to inquire of God. I didn't write this, but I like it. If you value comfort over character, trials will upset you. If you live for the present and not for the future, trials will make you bitter, not better. Our sufferings are not for God to see how strong we are, but they are for us to see how strong we are. I think that is a good way to look at our trials. God already knows how strong we are because He told us that He's not going to tempt us any farther than we can handle, right? So He already knows how strong we are. But it's for us to gain confidence, to gain faith, so that we can be convicted, so that we can be His servants, so we can be the light on the candlestick, waving all around, so that we can be His servants. 1 Peter 4:12 tells us not to be surprised by the painful trials we are to suffer, but to rejoice in them so that we may see God's glory. I'm debating on telling you this because I don't want this to be about me. Every Lord's Supper, there's something that I think about. I think about God's mercy. Think about the mercy He had for me. A little over a year ago, I was scared. I was really scared. I was in Polk County Jail. And there were men of all sorts of backgrounds, Spanish speaking and other languages. They were tattooed and scary. Some of them were skinny, some of them were fat, some of them were mean looking. I was scared, scared to death. I couldn't contact anyone. There was no one I could contact. I didn't know who knew where I was at. I was almost in a constant state of prayer. And when I wasn't praying, in my head I was singing hymns. And thinking to myself, oh wait, what's the next word? Oh, what a horrible Christian I am. I can't even remember these songs. I don't have these things memorized. This stuff should be basic. But I think about the mercy God gave me. God gave me mercy that next morning. I went and I stood before a judge. And the judge said, your bail is $1,000. Oh, great, $1,000. I don't have $1,000. I don't even have privileges enough to call somebody. See, when you go, you do get that one phone call. But I was so scared I was going to cry. I didn't talk very long. because I didn't want to cry. I didn't want these big burly men to see me crying. So anyway, I have no idea how I'm going to get $1,000. My mom doesn't have $1,000. My brother doesn't have $1,000. How am I going to get out? Who's going to get me out? My mind is going crazy. So I left the judge, and this fella sat down with me, and he said, there's two ways of getting out of here. One is to pay the $1,000. Two is ask for the judge to waive your bail. I'm like, sweet, the judge can waive my bail? Oh, wait, I'm a loser. Nothing ever works right for me. Nothing ever works right for me. I'm stuck in here for who knows how long. So we go back before the judge. And the judge waives my bail. And within an hour, I'm out of there. I think about that. Every Lord's table, the mercy God has shown me. I didn't see a way out. I didn't see a way out. But God knew how to get me out. I'm going to cut my lesson a little bit short here. I used to think that this whole story was about conviction. But now I'm wondering, maybe the story is about fear. Balak was an evil man, yes. He wasn't even... He went to evil things. But when he was scared, who did he go to? He went to his own mind. He went to his own thinking. He thought, oh, a sorcerer can help me. But I think the lesson is that when we're scared, we need to go to God. Remember, after Moses died, Joshua is now running the group. And the people around them are scared. And these two kings, they're scared. And so what they do is they decide to do a ruse here. They decide to act like they're from some faraway country. And they come in and they say that they want to make a peace treaty. A treaty with the children of Israel. So they don't wipe them out. The men of Israel went with their own thinking. Said, okay. But the Bible says they did not inquire of God of what to do. They did not inquire of God what to do. Had they inquired of God, they wouldn't have fell into that trap. They wouldn't have been caught into that ruse. We sang a song today in the hollow of God's hand. Comes from Isaiah 42 and 6. And God is promising them, you are in my hand. I'm going to take care of you. There's no reason for you to be scared. There's no reason for you to fear. There's no reason for you to be a coward. And probably one of the most scary passages to me is found in Revelation 21, verse 8. And we're talking about who gets to enter the kingdom of heaven. I'm going to start with 7. He who overcomes will inherit this, meaning heaven, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But the cowards, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexual immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters, the liars, their place will be in a fiery lake. I need to remember to not be so scared. I need to remember not to rely upon what I think. to rely upon what God thinks. And we all have this avenue of prayer, to go to God and inquire, God, what do I do? When trials come, what do we want to do? We want to skirt around the trial. We want to get away from the trial. But if we go through the trial, then we learn how merciful God is to us. He provides for us. He has us in the hollow of His hand. Yeah, we may pay for our mistakes, like Dave said last week, but we're going to be right in the sight of God if we go through the trial and quit trying to go around the trial. We need to stop being so scared so that we can leave room for becoming convicted, having faith when these trials come. We need to be like the wise man and build our foundation on the Word. So when these trials come, we can withstand them. I heard this story once, so I hope that I don't make a mistake with it. But since I started out with a story of a donkey, I'm going to end with a story of a donkey. There was a farmer who had a donkey, and his donkey fell in a well. And he looked at this donkey in the well, and he's like, how am I going to get this donkey out? I don't know how to get this donkey out of here. So the only thing that he knew to do was to go get his neighbors, and they grabbed shovels. And they decided, yeah, I'll just bury the donkey. Well, as they started shoveling dirt on top of this donkey, the donkey starts shrugging and shaking the dirt off. And the farmers are just shoveling and shoveling, and the donkey's just shaking and shaking. He's shaking the dirt off, shaking the mud off. And before you know it, the donkey was level to the ground, and he walked right out of the well. That's a good lesson. Because we're going to get mud and dirt shoveled on us all the time. And if we sit there and we wallow in our pity, in our trials, and in our troubles, we're going to get buried. But if we learn to go to God and ask for what we should do, we're going to shrug this dirt off. And we're not going to get buried. And we're going to come out of the pits of despair, and we're going to walk right on out of there. I'm going to offer the gospel invitation. That's really all I got to say about that. If there's anyone in this room who is not a member of Christ's body, we're going to offer you a chance to come forward and be a part of that body so that you can get the good things that God has to offer. We'll stand and sing.